one of the
House Committee on Energy and Environment will come to order. I'm going to announce at the beginning that House Bill 2801 and 2893, once again, the amendments are not ready. The paperwork is not ready on those. And we will be holding those two bills over to the next hearing, and hopefully we will have something more then. And with that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2894. Adam?
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, House Bill 2894 raises the cost limits on small projects that do not require pre-certification to $50,000. It allows transit credits to be used as one-year credits, requires the state treasurer to set by-rule discount rates regarding tax credits relating to alternative fuel vehicles and rental housing units, requires the state treasurer to establish by-rule a formula for determination of prices and transferred tax credits, adds the replacement of alternative fuel vehicle fleets to the definition of transportation projects, takes effect 91 days after signee die. There is a -3 amendment to this measure. The -3 amendment replaces the measure, raises the cost limits on small projects that do not require pre-certification to $50,000, allows tax credits to be used as one-year credits, provides a definition of alternative fuel vehicle project and acquisition of alternative fuel vehicle fleet, takes effect 91 days after signee die. That measure has a revenue impact statement included and has a minimal fiscal impact statement. It currently has a subsequent referral to the House Committee on Revenue.
Colleagues, I think that this bill is ready to move on to revenue, and I would be looking for a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -3 amendments dated March 20 of 2013.
Vice Chair Johnson moves to adopt the -3 amendments dated March 20th, 2013. Is there any discussion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries.
Representative Chair, I move House Bill 2894 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Vice Chair Johnson moves House Bill 2894 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Discussion? Is there objection to the motion? Motion carries. And close the work session on House Bill 2894 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3451. And I will announce in advance my apologies to those in the audience. Representative Benson, I believe, will need to testify in a committee next door on another bill, but we will hear back about your testimony. Look forward to it. And call up Representative Gomberg and Senator Cruz. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Bailey, as you depart. Thank you, Chair Johnson. For the record, David Gombert from House District 10 out on the Central Oregon coast. And we're very pleased to be here today to share with you some information about House Bill 3451. Out on the Central Coast, we don't always agree with each other all the time. But there are some things that we do agree with each other about, and one of those things is that research is good. Research is a good thing. It supports our industry. It supports our lifestyles. It helps us better understand what's in store for us in our future. And this bill is about research. As I'm sure you know, we already have an active research hub that's evolving on the Central Coast around Yaquinta Bay in Newport. We've got the Hatfield Marine Science Center, a great success story. We have got NOAA, which we're very pleased to have there, and more recently we've got the PMEC site dealing with wave energy. One of the things that we're concerned about having, keeping, retaining, and expanding is ocean-going research, and that's what this bill is about. Now, in this economic environment, of course, we're not going to come to you and propose that we buy a boat. There's just not enough money to do that, and you know, when you come out to the coast and you can't afford to buy a house, what do? You buy a timeshare. And this bill is basically about an ocean-going research timeshare, because we're talking about purchasing a portion of the time on a federally owned a seagoing research vessel. We're supporting this overture for a variety of reasons, and I wanted to share some of them with you. First of all, funding a research vessel operations assures the continued presence of federally funded vessels in Oregon. Very important that we keep them here. Maintaining a vessel in Oregon provides over $3 million in economic benefits that accrue to the Central Coast and the research community. Federally funded research vessels provide invaluable scientific information necessary to better understand the changes occurring along the Pacific coast, changes that affect the safety, the environmental quality, and the productivity well beyond the territorial sea. And finally, that funding will support an effective opportunity for Oregon students to engage in research and experience firsthand the exciting aspects of environmental research. So I want to stress to you that this isn't just about Newport, it's not just about House District 10, this is an issue that affects the entire territorial sea, the Oregon coast, and the state of Oregon. Just a couple of other pieces of background to share with you, and then I wanted to turn to the Senator. Oregon is now the only state in the U.S. that does not provide state support for federally financed ocean research vessels that operate out of its ports. Lack of state support puts vessels at risk because research days are limited, which could result in the vessels being dry docked if operating funds are restricted. Now, this means significant losses to our local community, and as I indicated, that operating the Oceanus out of Newport right now expends approximately $3.6 million a year in the local area for fuel, for crew, for support, and for other operations. The National Science Foundation has awarded OSU a $3 million grant to design a new ocean-going research vessel, which is expected to grow into $290 million over the next 10 years. Upon construction, this vessel would replace the Oceanus. Oregon risks losing Oceanus if other states provide greater assurances of active deployment due to the support they commit to vessel operations. So House Bill 3451 would ensure the continued economic benefits, such as this $3.6 million a year that's spent in the local area, as well as the multiplier effect that can be found from local expenditures. And it would also create a research council of scientists and public members to help evaluate and rank proposals that would use the vessel. That's a little bit of the background on this, but in short, as I said at the beginning, we're talking about a floating research timeshare that will benefit not just the Central Coast economically, but can support the entire territorial sea, the Oregon coast, and the entire state of Oregon with invaluable information about our goals and what we hope to accomplish. So I'll answer questions in a few moments, but I wanted to make sure, first of all, that Senator Cruz got a chance to speak to you.
Thank you, Representative Gomberg. Members of the committee, for the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1, and Chair of the Coastal Caucus. And I agreed to be here as co-chief sponsor of the bill number one. I agreed to be here as Representative Gomberg's wingman, and which is a term we're using in the Senate now. You probably wouldn't understand it, having to do with Senator Knope and Senator Courtney. But that's a whole other story. We won't get into that now. We did an extraordinary thing 2 years ago when we acquired NOAA in Newport. I mean, that was an extraordinary piece of work we did and something we should be very proud of. What we are doing in our ocean at this point in time is relatively extraordinary. We are still in the process of C4 mapping. We now have marine reserves that need research. We have a lot of activities, and it's been the position of the Coastal Caucus that anything we do in our ocean should be scientifically based. And to be scientifically based, we have to do the research. This vessel is absolutely critical for us to be able to achieve our mission on the Oregon coast. I think I'm the first chair of the Coastal Caucus that doesn't actually live on the coast, I believe, but I do represent a third of the coast, and we presented this bill to Representative Gomberg to sponsor. Because it's in his district, number one. But number two, what we wanted to demonstrate to you all was the fact that this is a bipartisan, bicameral request that we are making, and it is absolutely essential that we move forward with this. And I want to thank the Oregon State for bringing this forward to us. And if you have questions, you can ask the guy down there. My main purpose here is to let you know that this is not a partisan issue. This is not a House or Senate issue. This is something that will benefit the state of Oregon. It's something we actually need to move forward with. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator. And just to dovetail with your comments about not actually residing in the location where your caucus is, you know, Senator Thompson actually chairs the Multnomah County Caucus, but he lives in Hood River with me. So there are some precedents in the building for that sort of
thing. There are, and Vice Chair Johnson, trust me, I would much rather be the chair of the Coastal Caucus than the Multnomah County Caucus.
I think the Senator would concur with that.
I would like to submit my resentment at that remark.
Well, thank you, Senator Cruz, for already creating some divisiveness here in the room.
You're wingman.
But what a great wingman I've got.
Yes. Love him.
And now the fighters are going to peel off and turn things over to the heavy bombers.
Yes. Please.
Vice Chair Johnson, members of the committee, I'm Mark Abbott. I'm the Dean of the College of Earth, Ocean, and Atmospheric Sciences at Oregon State University. I want to thank Representative Gomberg and Senator Cruz for carrying this forward and working with the Coastal Caucus over these last several months to develop this bill. I think both of them have laid out the concept. So the vessel right now, it's the RV Oceanus, which replaced Wacoma a little over a year ago. It's owned by the National Science Foundation, and every year the National Science Foundation looks to see how much research time can they support. And if there are not enough days, then ships get laid up. Well, the Oceanus is almost 40 years old, which for a ship is quite old. And it's likely that if there weren't enough days, the Oceanus might be one of those ships that would be laid up, and given her age, she might be retired from the fleet until a new ship comes on board roughly in 2020. As Representative Gomberg pointed out, our sister coastal states, Rhode Island, Hawaii, Washington, Washington, California, Alaska, all pay a certain amount of ship time. The University of Washington spends about $1.5 million a year to provide opportunities for the University of Washington graduate students. Same with the University of California, San Diego. State of California provides money for them as well. Our concept is that this would be a much broader pool of potential applications, ranging from state agencies to researchers within the Oregon University systems and down to students, that they could submit proposals, add into the schedule, and actually have access to the sea, to either as a learning experience, management, or research. We think that this would demonstration of commitment by the state of Oregon would go a long ways within the federal government as their budgets get tight, to show that Oregon is a good and solid partner. We've operated ships very successfully for 50 years, and this would be a step forward to show that Oregon is a full partner in this marine research endeavor. And as I think both Representative Gomberg and Senator Cruz pointed out, oceans are becoming more and more important. We're changing the oceans. Things like ocean acidification, if you look at what the Whiskey Creek oyster hatchery has gone through in the last 5 years, trying to deal with man-made changes in the ocean and maintain their economic livelihood, fundamental research has helped them get out of that bind. And that's the kind of thing that we see continuing into the future. So thank you for your attention and your consideration.
Thank you, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And good timing, guys.
Yep, perfecto.
And thank you all for coming today. I'm actually Senator Cruz's vice chair of Coastal Caucus. So, he gave part of my comments, which is pressuring that this is bicameral, bicoastal. Eight people, so almost 10% of the legislature. And I just wanted to point out that last week the House passed House Bill 2694, which works on plotting through the seafloor mapping, data banking, et cetera. And now this bill will get us another 7 to 10% down the road on that. We'll be up to, if we get the 10%, which as Dr. Goldfinger said, if we get good weather, et cetera, and we get our full days, it'll be up to 64% completed on that project. And that's every percent completed means more updated navigational charts, more accurate tsunami inundation zones, and we could go on. There's a lot of different priorities, but this is very, very important to the coast, and I'm so glad that you're all here today to help push this through. Thank you.
If I could, Ms. Chair. What's important to the coast is important to the state. So let's not say this is a coastal issue because It's our link to trade. It connects us to everything, and so this isn't just a coastal issue. Having a complete mapping helps us with everything. So yep. This obviously it has to happen in the ocean because you can't really do a boat someplace else. But I just want to point out that this is a benefit to the entire state.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair. It also sounds as if this would be a real benefit to the state's higher education research function. And could you say a little more about just how this will benefit graduate students who are studying in this area?
Sure, that's a great question. I can just give you an example from Washington and the way they do it. They have a pool of days, and if a graduate student has a research project, says, I need one or two extra days on a cruise, they can put in a proposal, it gets evaluated, and then the state pays for those extra two or three days of ship time for the student to do his or her own research. I think we can look at that model, and it would be not just OSU students, but people at the University of Oregon, down at the Charleston Lab or Portland State. We have a lot of collaborations among all the higher education institutions, as well as the community colleges, and even one could think of down the road maybe at least providing access to some of the data to K-12 and getting we've taken teachers to see for a day or two so that they can have that experience. They blog about it to their class and come back and really get the kids that hands-on that real experiential learning that gets kids excited and keeps them engaged in science. So I would see that as the one model for that process.
Sounds great. Thank you.
Mr. Vice Chair Wood.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And one thing that I should have mentioned, too, is that we have a multi-million dollar fisheries sector on the coast that services the whole state and our country, and we're trying to push more Oregon seafood marketing, et cetera. And we are stellar in the world for the quality of our fish, our sustainable marine mm-hmm. I think it's MSC. Anyway, the shrimp fishery, that I think tuna and crab and salmon they're all getting these wonderful international awards for the quality of their product.
Great.
And they need that research.
Sounds like we missed some testimony on a great bill, so we'll look forward to following up on that.
You didn't have to listen to me, so that was it.
Missed out. Thank you very much. I don't see any further questions. We appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Call up Bill Hall, John Labrakos, and Joanne Burton, please. Begin.
Thank you, Chair Bailey, Vice Chair Boone, and members of the committee. I am Bill Hall, the chair of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. I'm also here in support of 3451. For several years, our county government has been providing advocacy and resources to further the development of Yaquina Bay as a hub for ocean science. NOAA has already been mentioned, the impressive lineup of state and federal agencies at the Hatfield Marine Science Center. Also mentioned that the Oregon Coast Aquarium is just down the street. Now OMSI is developing a science camp nearby, so the critical mass that is developing on Yaquina Bay is really impressive, and I think there are significant reasons from both a scientific and an economic standpoint to support this trend. Yeah, it's something of a cliche, but I think it's true that the oceans really are our final frontier. Even though they cover the majority of our globe, the potential for scientific discovery remains huge. The implications for things like climate change, renewable energy production, the global food supply, the overall health of our planet are simply mind-boggling. And I think it's important that I emphasize ocean science is emerging as a major economic driver for the Central Coast. It generated $60 million in personal income last year, and it actually supplanted timber production as Lincoln County's third largest industry. Oregon State, of course, has a long and proud history in ocean science, and this builds on decades of experience, opens the opportunity to leverage federal resources, as well as providing strong direction for that work. You know, Certainly, I will agree this bill has coastwide, statewide implications, but I get to be the local chauvinist here for a moment, I hope. We often talk about the day when Newport will be known as the Woods Hole of the West, but I like to think about the day when that great ocean research center of Massachusetts is going to be called the Newport of the East. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chair Bailey, thank you so much for entertaining this bill. I am Joanne Barton. I chair the Board of Commissioners for the Port of Newport. I had the honor to work lobbying the legislature when we put in our successful offer to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration when we won that away from Seattle. Thank you very much. And this is another exciting opportunity for the coast, and one that I'm sure from the testimony you've already heard, you recognize the wisdom of continuing to support marine research. I think that Newport in particular is a community that knows how to collaborate, that knows how to make the most out of every investment the state of Oregon makes into our community and into our area. I think one of the special components of this proposal is the council that is being proposed that would review applications for research days on the vessel, and then, of course, report back to you, the legislature. So not wanting to just repeat what's been said, I think that you would find this a worthy investment that would pay dividends for the state of Oregon, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I'm John Lavrakis. I'm president of Advanced Research Corporation in Newport. And you're going to hear a lot of repetition, I think, from what has already been said. I have no financial gain in this, but I'm here for a reason. I serve as president of the Yaquinabe Economic Foundation. I also am co-chair of the Yaquinabe Ocean Observing Initiative. And both of these organizations support the economic development of our local region. And it represents, both organizations represent a large sector, a broad sector, including education, government, business, and hospitals and so on, social services. The legislators are considering this House Bill 3451 to establish at OSU this ocean-going research vessel program. And I want to speak in its behalf and state that I think it's going to be a benefit to all of Oregon, as already been said. The bill actually has been a key part of a multi-year program that Oregon has been following on growing the marine science sector. 40 years ago, we set up through state financing investments, the Hatfield Marine Science Center. 5 years ago, leaders from the center, George Bullard and others, and in the region, established an initiative to or set a goal to establish Newport as a hub for ocean observing in the Pacific Northwest, nationally recognized. And they set up a strategic framework to make that happen. And some remarkable things have happened, as you've heard. NOAA's put their Marine Operations Center there. That's a 20-year lease, as we heard, about $20 million a year to the economy. The National Science Foundation is building out an observatory array called the Endurance Array off the Oregon coast. That's millions of dollars. It's a five-year build-out. It's 20 plus years it'll be operating off of our coast, and that'll go into the schools, a lot of that information. The PMAC, the Pacific Marine Energy Center, is going off our coast as well. Department of Energy is putting millions of dollars into that, and that's going to be a 20-plus year activity. So you're seeing a lot of infrastructure going in. We're pretty excited about that. And as Bill pointed out, we have a $60 million economy now in Lincoln County, third behind fishing and behind tourism. But it's growing. The next thing, then, is this research vessel. The Oceanus is almost 40 years old and will need to be replaced. And we're really fortunate that OSU has selected a $3 million grant to design the next vessel. But that doesn't give us the next vessel. And the federal government's going to look at ways at saving money. They're going to look for states. They're going to favor states that provide support to their research. And so One could ask, what's the effect if we don't fund this? And the effect could be that we would lose our vessel, which means that our Oregon State scientists would be going to other states to do their research, and that the investments we've made already in our marine science infrastructure, we'd be losing those. Those would be lost. And so this bill has a modest cost to it, but I think the benefits are really huge. And so I speak in favor of it, and I think you should really consider this as you support Oregon's future in marine research. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Boone.
Oh, any questions?
Chair. Commissioner Hall, I have to ask, if this is going to be the Huey of the West, do we call it Newey?
Okay. I'm good with that.
Ms. Barton, I know there is a lot of credit to go around, but I haven't had a chance to say it to you. Thank you for all the work you put in to getting the NOAA fleet in Newport. That is a win for the entire state of Oregon. It's a win for my constituents as well as the people in your community. We're very happy about that. And also, thank you for giving us your son to serve in this body. We are, at least some of us, are grateful for that. So.
I'm very honored on both parts.
Any further questions? Thank you to this panel.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Tim Josie, please.
She seems a lot more reasonable than her son.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Tim Josie. I'm a Tillamook County Commissioner. This is my 15th year, and prior to that, I was a state representative, and Representative Boone worked for me. And I've been around the horn long enough to know when the skids are greased, and this bill's going to go, and it's going to pass, and so I'm not going to spend a lot of time. I'm here because Jock Mills told me to come. And since I graduated from Oregon State University, I pay attention to what he has to say, and I've been involved with marine reserves and marine protected areas and the territorial sea plan. I'm on LCDC, so I've been up to my eyeballs in this stuff. The reason why I support the bill and why the county commissioners in Tillamook County support the bill is because of the research. And the research is not just the stuff that's been mentioned. I'm going to mention something else that's near and dear to Tillamook County, and that's the Neatarts Shellfish Hatchery. And they have had a heck of a time here recently because of acidification of the ocean. And if you look at the bill closely, it mentions that. And folks, this is a canary in the coal mine, and the baby shellfish, one of the first things that they do is they armor themselves with a shell. And if the ocean is too, if the water is too acidic, they can't go through that process, and so they die. And so the first thing that the Neatarts Shellfish Hatchery did is contacted Oregon State University, and they spent a lot of time working with this company and doing the research, and they've discovered what the problem was. They had a couple of other issues that they thought it was, but what it really is acidification. Acidification is a huge, huge issue for us. We need to understand that. And if these folks are going to be spending some time out on this research vessel doing C4 mapping, I want them to spend some time doing some acidification studies too. I'm finished. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Boone, would you care to take advantage of the situation?
Oh, yes. Please sit down, Commissioner Joseph.
Use on the other foot.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I never miss an opportunity to thank Commissioner Josie for teaching me everything I know and how to do it. And he was great to work with. He is great to work with as commissioner. And we are so fortunate to have him. Thanks, Tim.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you
for egging her on. I appreciate
that. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Yes, bye now.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 3451? Seeing none, colleagues, I would say that you are highly likely to see this bill back very soon on an agenda. So if there are any concerns, please let me know. Now I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3451 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2981. Adam?
Chair Bailey, members of the committee, House Bill 2981 allows the exemption from ad valorem property taxation under the Rural Renewable Energy Development Program if either the governing body of the zone sponsor adopts a resolution waiving requirements or if a $5 million investment is made. It takes effect 91 days after signing die. There is a dash one amendment to this measure. The dash one amendment replaces the measure. It allows an exemption from ad valorem property taxation under the Rural Renewable Energy Development Program if the governing body of the zone sponsor adopts a resolution waiving requirement and if a $5 million investment is made. It takes effect 91 days after signing die.
And the dash threes? That's what I have on here.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So we have the dash one amendment. This is one of those very common Bailey-McLean bills that you see all the time. And I will call up Werner Seaman, Troy Gagliano, and Doris Penwell, please.
Excuse me. So is it a total gotten stuff, should you say? A total replacement of the bills?
Dash ones.
Chair Bailey, Representative Whitsitt, the dash ones, and I'm sure the proponents will speak to this. It just allows an exemption if both things occur. While it is a replacement in the measure, the replacement allows the exemption if both the governing body approves of it, of the waiver, as well as the $5 million exemption is made. The original measure allows the exemption if either one of those things occurs.
Mr. Seaman.
I'll start this. I'm Doris Penwell. I represent the Association of Oregon Counties and the Community Renewable Energy Association with regard to this bill. And we're here today in support of the Dash 1 amendments to 2981. I'm starting off this discussion because I have a little background in how this program was developed in the first place some years ago. The program was established, patterned after the Enterprise Zone program, but for renewable energy projects, large or small, that could be developed in rural areas of the state where there may not be an ability to have a defined area that you would have a project, but you would more, there's a footprint to many renewable energy projects. So the program allows And it's ORS 285C 350 to 370. You should know that because it's a short program description. But it allows a county or city or multiple counties to sponsor together areas for such development. But no one renewable energy development zone may contain a project or projects with a value more than $250 million. And for renewable energy projects, that is not huge. I would say. The development of a zone and the acceptance of the projects is totally choice by the local zone sponsors. And if one of the counties does not want to provide for the fourth and fifth year of abatement, as is usually provided, as not usually, but sometimes provided, they may elect not to do so. So it's total choice at the local level. The program is patterned, as I said, after the Enterprise Zone program and meets some of the same criteria, 3 to 5 years of abatement. You must be a traded sector business, which most energy development projects are. But because the footprint, as I said, is not something that could be put in a zone, this program was adapted. The associations I represent today are in support of this proposal as it has adapted for particularly renewable, I would say, solar energy projects. We know of several projects that would like to locate in rural areas. We have local officials that would like to accept the projects, but since a single project may be sizable enough, but not have a job connected to it at the end of construction, the current program would simply not allow you to be chosen for that zone. So this, but in lieu of the job, the sponsors of this bill decided that you would have to have a minimum investment of at least $5 million in order to be allowed and chosen by the zone sponsors to be accepted for a 3 to 5 year exemption. Over the long term, these facilities will pay property taxes, they'll provide local energy, and as an added benefit, be one of the things that reduces greenhouse gases in Oregon. For all of these reasons, we have a lot of entities that would like this sort of proposal to move forward, and we hope that you can accept it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Varner Seaman. I'm the policy director at Renewable Northwest Project. We're speaking in favor of 2981-A. And a couple of things I want to say. First, that this bill is not. One, this is not an appropriation. We're not asking for additional money from the or money in this bill from the state. Second, this is not a new program. And third, the reason why we have this is largely, I think I was just in the other room with Chairman Bailey and Representative Benz. It's coming about from what we've seen in terms of a tremendous drop in the cost of solar energy over the last several years. The reason that a tax abatement helps a solar project is that when you build a solar project, and in particular what we're talking about here are relatively small-scale solar projects compared with a lot of the wind energy we've seen developed in the state. When you build a fairly small solar project in the range of, say, 3 to 20 megawatts, you have a fairly significant upfront cost of capital. But then for the rest of the life of the project, 20, 25, 30 years, you have no ongoing fuel costs and fairly minimal operation costs. When the REDS, the Rural Renewable Energy Development Zones program was created, it was largely envisioned to accommodate what we see in parts of the state where we have large-scale, utility-scale wind energy projects. Those projects are fairly labor-intensive as we go through the operations and maintenance. And what we've seen with the drop in panel prices for solar energy is that solar energy to be developed in the state of Oregon is increasingly commercially competitive at a cost point in competitive solicitations for utilities. And for this program, however, the benefit that this would provide is that if you can have a couple years tax abatement or a few years in the early part of a program, and then you pay taxes throughout the life of that facility, that helps the projects pencil out, and it helps make them commercially competitive. With that said, for these small projects that we're talking about here in HB 2981, in the current program, there's a requirement that you create at least one ongoing FTE. For these facilities, and Troy is going to talk a moment about a project that his company developed here in Oregon, small facility, you don't necessarily need a full-time operations and maintenance person for those projects on an ongoing basis. So what we think that this bill does is it gives some optionality to counties or the sponsors of a red zone. Again, this is not a requirement on a county, but if a county in looking at a project that's proposed says, we would like to waive that FTE requirement, and we think that it is worth it to us to get that long-term investment and the stable tax revenue over the life of a project, it gives the county the ability to do so. Again, this is not a new appropriation. This is a modification of an existing program, and we, for that reason, we ask you to support the amended 2981. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Troy Gagliano. I'm a project developer with EDF Renewable Energy. We develop a range of hydro, wind, solar, biomass technologies. Our parent company, EDF, is one of the largest utilities in the world, and they work in renewables as well as thermal technology. So we work in a range of fuels and power plants. We employ 35 folks in Oregon, and I'm with our development office. My brief testimony today, I'd like to talk about our two big reasons why we support the bill, a lot of what you've heard. And then two, having built roughly 3 megawatts worth of solar projects in Oregon, I'd like to use that as an example to illustrate some of the current economic development impacts, positive impacts that these projects are making to the host communities. So quickly, our support mostly for two reasons. I won't reiterate what you've heard, but basically the original red zone does have that one FTE requirement. And when you build large wind projects like we have built and also like we do operations and maintenance on, you need a lot of folks turning wrenches, climbing towers, that sort of thing. That's a lot of O&M. For solar projects, it's really not till you get to about a 15 or 20 megawatt size where you really justify an FTE. It's basically panels on a racking system in the ground. No moving parts. You know, you can't have one guy go out there with a hose and clean panels every day. It just doesn't justify it. And I think Oregon's future is a lot more for projects in the range of 2 to 5 megawatts when we're talking about solar. As you've heard, it's not a new program or appropriation. I think it's important to know it's just a way to make sure that the existing policy works well. Solar panels, for example, have fallen in price by half in just the last 2 years. So from when the red zone was created to today, I think in those years, solar has emerged as a player. So you're seeing projects now, and you'll see more. So then a bit just on some economic development impacts. I used, again, our Oregon experience to, in this example, assume a 3-megawatt project built in 2015. In terms of power output, that would be enough electricity for about 475 average homes. It would occupy about 25 acres, and a project would have a value of between $6 and $7 million. When you're talking about solar, the jobs are really in the construction phase. So for about 4 months it would take to build a project like this, it would create about 58 or 60 jobs. That would total about 22,000 work hours. In some of the projects that we've built, we have used a lot of local labor. We like to do that wherever we can, and we use 12 different firms, ranging from McMinnville to Sherwood, Tualatin, North Bend, Plains, to do work from surveying and civil work all the way to fencing and site security. So there's a lot of local talent you can use for these projects. And then finally, I'll just talk a little bit about property tax specifically, again, using our projects from 2011. Over the course of 20 years, the property tax for those projects, again, about 3 megawatts, will pay $1.6 million to the county in property tax. We don't have a red zone abatement, didn't seek it. Current law wouldn't allow it because we wouldn't have an FTE. But if you did have a 3-year property tax abatement, that the county would still get $1.2 million over the remaining 17 years. So just to give you an example of 1.6 versus 1.2 is still what the county would receive. And then the one final point I'd like to make is that in addition to these property tax and job creation contributions, it's important to understand that the projects don't drain county services. You know, we're not using local water. We're not having to call fire or police. And in the almost 2 years that our projects have been up and running, we've had no issues, vandalism, nothing along those lines where we had to call fire or police or rely on those local services. So thank you for your consideration and for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Representative Betts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The concept is understandable out in my part of the world. Tell me about it in downtown Portland or in Bend, or tell me why it wouldn't apply there, or would it?
Well,
sure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Betts, Doris Penwell. This, we are trying to amend the rural renewable energy development zone, and that is really set up for rural areas of the state. And most renewable energy is developed in rural Oregon, if you can place it on the land somewhere. So that's why, I mean, you couldn't find that many acres in Portland to do this. And therefore, this program was established this way, and that's why we're working with this program on this particular issue.
Hello. Right. I'm not sufficiently familiar with this particular zone to know if it's only rural. Is it only rural?
Yes, it's only rural. And it can be an area in a county, and it can be across two counties or so, if you want, depending on what a proposal might be. But as I said earlier, there's a limitation on how much investment is allowed for the area, up to $250 million. So it could be several. But, you know, one large something else could be way over $250 million. But they wanted to limit it because they'd have some control locally for what is going in and is not going in.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benz, I think that sort of a rough rule of thumb that we use in looking at renewable energy on the wind side is about $2 million a megawatt installed. With solar, it's going to be ever so slightly higher. So if we're talking about $250 million, that's going to be roughly about, for solar, I think that'd be roughly around the upper limit of that, probably about a 100 megawatt project.
Please. Thank you. I guess I'm interested in revenue this morning and seeing how many tax credits stack up on some of these projects.
Yes.
This is one. How many others might be available to a
a $250 million project. And when I say that, I'm thinking back on some of the deals I actually helped put together for wind projects. Right. And they were 15-year deals that structured property taxes over that long period of time.
Right.
I'm not sure if this was available then or not. But just give us some sense of how this one fits in with the rest of the subsidies that we've developed.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence, I believe when we established this program, we weren't as assured of how things would develop over time with renewable energy in Oregon. When we got into developing the wind projects, especially on the Gorge and further over in eastern Oregon, we found out that for most of the projects, an enterprise zone didn't work as well as a strategic investment program because for large-scale projects, the depreciation on the equipment for the project just fell quickly over just 1 or 2 or 3 years. And so the value of the project by the time the abatement was over was not, didn't pencil out for the local, the counties, the cities, the special districts in terms of revenue. So it worked out better for the local taxing districts, and it worked out better for the businesses to do an SIP rather than an enterprise zone. But depending on the kind of business, an enterprise zone works much better than an SIP because of the type of thing that it is. I believe that now this kind of a program probably works better for the smaller projects as have been discussed here today. They would never use a strategic investment program. It just simply wouldn't pencil out for them, and it wouldn't make sense. But an enterprise zone might. And if local people are interested in getting some of these projects in their area, this might be a tool they could use.
And I would comment as well, Representative, as you are no doubt aware, but I'll say it for the record too, because you were part of this process. There is currently going forward functionally no renewable energy Betsy. We have That's a small right. pilot program working on grants, but there is, for all intents and purposes for these kinds of projects, not functionally renewable energy business energy tax credit anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was actually thinking of, if I may,
please,
a couple of other credits, but let me just build on the answer you just provided.
Right.
Some of these facilities do indeed depreciate over time, and then
right.
and the tax that they pay to the county, does that also drop over time because you're busy paying on the value of that property? Mm-hmm. And that's been my understanding on personal property, but I'm not sure how it works on wind towers. In other words, is this 5 years that they're taken off the hook, the tax hook, when it's over, is that which they then pay dramatically less by virtue of the depreciation of the equipment?
Well, let me answer part of that, if I may, and then these gentlemen can, too, about the specific projects they're talking about. When the county and the business negotiates a strategic investment program, it is totally flexible. And most of the SIPs that have been negotiated make the payment over time for 15 years level, regardless of depreciation. And that's why it's important. In the early years, some of the folks that may have negotiated some of these projects didn't quite know what Department of Revenue would do with them in terms of depreciation, but now they might know. So we've learned over time what to do and not do with in terms of what programs to use and for what kind of businesses. And then
I think this is not a SIP.
Okay. This is not a SIP. This is just an enterprise zone for a rural area without the same kind of footprint
as
we have.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bence, I think the example that Mr. Gagliano gave a moment ago, the modeling that they've done internally at EDF would be without developing in a red zone. It's easier to say that than the full name. It would be about $1.6 million in property tax revenues. Developing in a red zone would be about $1.2 million in property tax revenues, to give a specific sort of modeled out looking at the financials of a project. If that's...
Mr. Chair,
please.
Since we're going to see this again in revenue, I can ask all these questions there also.
I think it's good to get this on the record, Representative.
Sure.
Okay, so my question again was, mm-hmm. it's higher value at the front end mm-hmm. where the depreciation is being taken yeah. and the property tax abated. And then at the end of that 5 years, much of this property is usually on an accelerated depreciation basis, and thus that which is remaining to be taxed after that is that period of time has passed is less. That's and correct. So I'm simply asking if, mm-hmm. if I have that much of it, at least sort it out. And these are complex matters. Mm-hmm. It would be much better if we could see exactly what maybe right. the county saw mm-hmm. so we could understand more specifically how this really works. Because the general numbers that you provide are interesting but not adequate. And sure. if certainly... I'm sure for all of our purposes. So, okay. they may be great, but I shouldn't need to see them.
Mr. Chairman, I think as a practical matter, I'm just for the sake of clarity, the numbers that we would be providing would be modeled numbers because we, to my knowledge, we haven't to date had a county approve a small solar project in a red zone. So to be clear.
You couldn't.
So you couldn't do that now. So I just want to be clear that whatever numbers we would be providing would be modeled numbers as opposed to specific that had been based on experience.
But you do have projects you've done in Oregon, so you know what the value was when you put it in, and you know what it is today. So you might be able to give that kind of information.
Follow up,
please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is applicable to far more than solar. And
yeah.
So solar is interesting, all right, but this is a much broader
yes.
scope of things. So don't feel constrained to limit it to solar. In fact, don't. That
yeah.
wouldn't be that helpful.
Good.
Thank
Great.
You.
We can do
Thank
that.
Thank you.
That's good.
Representative Whitsitt.
So has AOC contacted all of the rural county commissioners so that our counties have an input into your recommendation since you're representing AOC?
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Whitsitt, I have made some contacts with some of the folks that I don't believe may have been at the meeting when we approved unanimously this proposal. The association, meets monthly. We have bills that we're supporting and not. This one was one of them. And I'm sure that not every county commissioner was at the meeting, but I am in the process of contacting folks now to find out what they might think about this. One of the reasons that the county commissioners voted in support of it is because it's their local choice to do so. They don't need to approve an abatement for 5 years. They can do it for 3 years. They can not have a zone at all. They can do whatever they think the project deserves. So it's up to them, not AOC or anyone else, and that's what makes it so favorable to them mostly. So I'm contacting them.
Follow up. I just talked to my county commissioners before I came in, and they hadn't. Klamath County's a rural county that has a lot of what we're looking at here potentially, and they didn't know about this. And I think it's really important to make sure that these large counties that you're going to be would be being applied to, that the commissioners are aware of the bill
sure.
before it passes out of this committee. And I was just wondering, I had one other question. Do you know how many of these renewable projects across the spectrum are built by one company and then sold to other companies, sometimes in other countries, after they're completed?
It might be better for you folks.
I'm not aware of any, and again, I'm talking about just like your 2 to 5 megawatt project. The projects that we've got, we're selling to Portland General Electric. They're just buying the power, but we've maintained ownership of it. So I'm not aware of any that have used that model.
Okay, follow-ups. In our county, we had a proposal for a large project that one of the things, it was going to be built by one company and then sold to Japan. That was part of the plan. And so, you know, I just want to make sure if we are talking about giving tax abatements, essentially, that we end up the counties, like Klamath County, almost all of our energy is going into California. We have a place where it crosses the border into California. And so we are using our county resources to provide energy for another state. And, you know, I'm very concerned that the citizens of our county will not receive the benefits of having these facilities in the county and using our land and water, and et cetera.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Whitsitt, I think as a practical matter, when we look at the significant amount of the renewable energy that has been developed in the state of Oregon, that renewable energy has been developed for export. And one of the things that I think when we look at developing an economy, and I'm going to look at Representative Bailey, who has more, I think, credentials on this than I do, Oregon is a net export economy. Throughout our economy, we export wheat, we export beef, we export silicon, we export computer chips. And I think that one of the things that we've seen in the renewable energy discussions that's been frustrating for folks in the Northwest in the last few years is we've had less investment and development dollars coming into the state because the state of California has said we're having a jobs problem, and the state of California has chosen to try to keep more of those jobs in the state of California. From my perspective, I think Oregon does well being a state that has a trade surplus, and so I think that, you know, we want to be clear about how these projects are developed and where the energy does flow. And I think to answer your question, just to be very straightforward and clear about it, some of the projects that are developed in the state are for export, and for the part on the part of Renewable Northwest Project, we think that that's a good thing.
But you continue to pay property taxes in Oregon. That's the point of all of this, that over the long term, we will get property taxes in Oregon.
Representative Whitsitt, one more.
Yeah, well, I go with what Representative Ben said. They take the top part off, and then we get this little reduced dribble out thing over 20 years. And so my objection is that we take, you have this gradational taxation structure, mm-hmm. and if you take the first 3 or 5 years off, it just decreases. The projects that we've seen in our county just get less and less. So my objection comes from taking the prime part of the meat out of the, mm-hmm. if you will, out of the taxation. So thank you.
Thank you. Good. Vice Chair Johnson. Good.
Well, just to piggyback on the representative's comments, we are indeed an export state, but we don't have the level of tax credits available for all of our exports. My farmers in Hood River County aren't being given tax credit upon tax credit for apple or pear production, so that's a larger issue that's apart from this committee here. But my question, Doris, regarding the siting of these facilities, do our land use laws have any stipulations regarding where they can and can't be located, i.e., can they be on exclusive farmland or high-value farmland or forest? Are there any sort of stipulations in the codes that you're aware of?
Well, this bill doesn't deal with, you know, the land use issues.
Okay.
There are other bills, including some that Representative Mintz is involved in, that will more clearly identify where you might be able to place some of these projects. But there are areas where that are already available for smaller projects, the kind that we're sort of talking about, that are indeed available, and the land use laws would allow it by conditional use permitting.
All right. Seeing no further questions. Oh, did you have a comment, Mr. Gagliano? Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to Representative Whitsitt brings up a good point, especially in SIPs and some of those models, things can be structured, so there's a lot of value up front, but boy, it plummets quickly. I'm not aware of any accelerated depreciation for the size of solar projects that I'm talking about specifically, like the 2 to 5 megawatt. Mm-hmm. And I've got, you know, I'm sort of looking at the numbers that I've run, just to share this with you generally. So for the first 3 years, like I said before, first off, without the property tax abatement, $1.6 million to the county over 20 years. If we did have a three-year abatement applied to that, it would still be $1.2 million to the county over the years four on, and then if you did a four-year abatement, it would still be $1.1 million paid in property tax, and even all the way out to 5 years, $1 million to the county. So it's not a big drop, I would say, you know, precipitous drop quickly. Mm-hmm. And then just looking at the value, and again, this is based on, you know, we got the property tax bills for the projects, and that's what this is based on. So assessed value, year one, you know, $10.2 million, year two, $9.7 million, year three, $9.1 million. So, you know, and in the year five, still 8.2. So there's a lot of that value is still in those first years for these kinds of sites.
I have one other question.
Please.
For me. So let's talk geothermal here for a minute. So down in Klamath, we have a proposed, and it's being coming online, I guess, geothermal. It's we'll have perhaps 10 or 12 wells that are spread around the county. So if they, if the company decided to have an enterprise zone for each one of those wells and make each one a project not to exceed $250 million, could they break it up this way and have a project that equaled, say, $1 billion by making the wells with their own enterprise zones?
I would, Mr. Chair, Representative, what's it? I would hope someone would not do that. Our company would not do that. that's kind of all I have to say on that. But that's a very good point about the gaming, and that has to be considered, on, especially on large things.
Did this happen on the wind farm somewhere up where they had a number of took Betsy's for projects that were all part of a larger project? By making it seem like it was a bunch of smaller projects?
There is, I think, under review currently, the Oregon Department of Energy is currently reviewing the Betsy's that were given to project, the Shepherd's Flat project in northeastern part of the state. For our position relative to that project, that's not a member of Renewable Northwest Project that developed that project, we would hope that ODO would do a complete review of the rules and that they would apply the rules appropriately as written, and that if there was some gaming of the project, that they would take the appropriate action for that. In terms of your specific question related to geothermal, I don't know well enough the specific rules to see if someone would be able to do that. I would reiterate that when we talk about the red zones and the program that we're talking about here, this is a program administered by counties and administered by county commissioners by and large. If a county chose not to grant an application similar to that, there's nothing that would require them in this program to do that sort of piecing together. So if the commissioners in Klamath County decided that's not a good deal for Klamath County, that it looks like somebody's trying to game the provisions of it, it's absolutely within the authority of the county commissioners to prevent that type of project from moving forward.
Chair, may I suggest that this bill be written to make sure that the system can't be gamed, that it's not just left up to somebody who may not be as sophisticated when they're deciding what they're doing, perhaps, as lawyers for a large corporation? Can we make sure that this can't be gamed by having a bunch of projects, $250 million projects, stuck together in adjacent enterprise zones?
I think that's an appropriate concern, Representative. I think there is a tension also between how prescriptive we write the state law and local control of a locally driven project. So I think the concern is extremely valid, and I will definitely hope that proponents will look into potential language around that. And I think doing so in the context of making sure that the state isn't overly prescriptive on what local jurisdictions can decide makes sense for their own counties.
Thank you. We'll do that.
Great.
Further questions? Okay. Appreciate the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glenn Montgomery, please.
Good afternoon, Representative Bailey, members of the committee. My name is Glenn Montgomery. I'm the executive director of Oregon Solar Energy Industries Association, the trade group that represents installers, manufacturers, developers, and others who support solar industry. I just want to add a couple of brief comments. I'm thinking back to a couple of years ago when we had a Betsy, which allowed for 50% tax credit on projects. In large part, the wind development industry took advantage of that to the greatest degree. But in the solar industry, we too benefited, and we had a thriving industry that, in particular in that commercial sector of which we are talking about right now, was growing, and companies were moving into Oregon. Those companies have since moved out when we capped the Betsy and when we dismantled the program. and we have a commercial industry that's struggling. This is enabling legislation. We have come so far now. The prices, as were mentioned in previous testimony, have come down so dramatically. We don't need a 50% Betsy anymore. On those larger scale projects, that's not necessary. We still need a little bit of a bump. This is an example of legislation that gives us a little bit of a bump. And it is permissive. If I read the text correctly, and if it hasn't changed since I first read it, this is not a mandatory requirement. This just gives the county or the city or a local jurisdiction an opportunity to negotiate if they see that it's worth their while to bring that project to their rural area. So in that respect, I certainly support this. I urge you to support it because it is enabling legislation that provides a real value in terms of the jobs associated with the development of these projects, provides a real value in terms of promoting renewable energy. This is a zero emissions energy resource. And on another note, in terms of just the vast potential we have in Oregon, I was just in the other room. Chair Bailey, Representative Bence were there testifying on House Bill 2820 regarding large-scale projects, larger than what we're speaking of today here. My testimony, which followed that, was to give you an idea of putting it into perspective, and you both stole my thunder. Thank you very much. So I didn't have much more to say than they already said. But Representative Bence talked about how large a land area his county alone is and how much of an opportunity we have for these types of projects. And when we're talking about 3 megawatts, that's nothing compared to what the opportunity is. We have a report that's coming out shortly that's called The Vision to Integrate Solar in Oregon. That report posits that we could actually achieve 20% of our energy through solar in Oregon using 65 square miles of Oregon's land. Now, Representative Bence said he had somewhere on the order of 29,000 square miles. I was thinking it was square kilometers. I looked it up on the web. The web is clearly wrong. That makes my point even more effective. 65 square miles could produce 20% of our energy. Today, we support less than 0.1% of our energy with solar in Oregon. So that just gives you an idea of what the opportunity is. It's technically feasible. And the costs are coming down, especially at those large scale, where we don't really need a lot of support from government. We need enabling legislation. We don't need a lot of money. And that's not going to change. The economics are going to continue to improve. We'll see some ebbs and flows, but the economics in the long term are going to continue to improve. So I would encourage you to look at this type of a tool that just gets us moving along that curve and pushes the needle a little bit further in the right direction. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for this witness? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony.
Yeah.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Bill 2981? Seeing none. Close public hearing on House Bill 2981. Anything for the good of the order? Committee is adjourned.